Everywhere you turn, there is sin, and it causes counseling problems. So just camp out with me here for a minute, and let's think about the ways that we experience sin in a sinful world where no individual person did anything to you. One way that we can experience that is with the workings of the devil. The Bible says that the devil is like a roaring lion prowling around looking for someone to devour. He's looking for you. Now listen, here's another thing where biblical counseling is so different than other kinds of counseling that are out there. If I were at the Maui College over here, and the psychology department asked me to come and give a lecture on the kinds of counseling problems that people face, and I said, you know, I want to talk to you today about how to deal with the devil in counseling. Well, good night. They'd be so sorry they invited me to speak. They wouldn't know what to do. Sometimes even Christians can get uncomfortable talking about this, but the Bible's very clear that the devil is real. The Bible assures us that he is prowling around, trying to pick off Christians. Now, what the devil looks like and how he works and what he does and how to combat that is another topic for another day. But the point is that we can experience pain in this world by being tormented by the workings of the devil. What about another issue? Death and dying. We live in a world where shirts that say eat right, exercise, die anyway make sense. This is what we talked about last night. It doesn't matter what you do, you're going to die. So this is the motivational speaker part of this, right? Everybody feeling good so far? You ever seen What About Bob? It's one of my favorite movies. If you've never seen What About Bob, you should go, well, actually, What About Bob is a brilliant movie. It's written as a satire against secular psychology and all their different interventions at treatment. They make fun of secular psychology all through the whole thing. I don't know who wrote it, but it's really a brilliant and insightful satire on psychology and all the different therapies. But Siggy, who is Dr. Marvin's son, is named after Sigmund Freud, and he always wears black. And he says, face it, you are going to die. I am going to die. And there's nothing we can do about it. He's this like 10-year-old, you know, who's like saying this, and you're like, wow, that's hopeful. But he's right. We are going to get sick. And we are going to die. You don't have to do anything wrong. You just were born into a world where death reigns. What about the world being opposed to us? Here I mean the world as the kingdom of darkness against the kingdom of light. The Bible pictures the three enemies of the Christian as being the world, the flesh, and the devil. Our enemies, our own self, the flesh, the devil, we've already talked about, and the world. We live in a world that just loves evil. There's no one person that's out to get you, but there's just a kingdom of wickedness that reigns. So we live in a world that says it's okay to look at pornography. And if you say something's wrong with pornography, you're a prude. I was just reading in a magazine the other day where one of the popular things on college campuses these days is to have porn viewing nights, where you'll have whole halls that you're not allowed to knock on the door because everybody's engaged in looking at porn in their own dorms, and you just know it's just bad taste to knock on the door and interrupt that. We live in a world that says that's okay. Listen. We live in a world where if you are a man and you want to be married to another man, You can do that. And the only thing that's bad is to say that's bad. If you say that's bad, boy, are you in trouble. But that's the world we live in. We live in a world where if you have sex with your boyfriend and you don't want the baby, there are all kinds of places you can go and go have an abortion. You can have the baby killed before it is born. And again, the only thing you're not allowed to do is say that there's something wrong with that. You know, I got a real jolt of moral clarity when a couple years ago we were watching the news. The news was on in our living room, and the kids were roaming around. And our two oldest, Carson and Chloe, they're pretty astute. They're paying attention when you don't think they're paying attention. Our little one, Connor, he doesn't even know where he is half the time. But Carson and Chloe, they're really paying attention. And the story on the news was that the president of the United States, a Hawaiian, so he was just here. In fact, I think he left right before we got here. But he was making the news because he was doing a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood, and he was giving a speech about the right to abortion and all this kind of thing. And Carson and Chloe, they came up to me, and they said, "Daddy, what's abortion?" And I said, "Well, that is where you can, if a mommy doesn't want her baby, she can have the baby killed before it's born." And listen, I'm telling you, I had an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old look up at me, and they said, "Well, Daddy, why would President Obama be for that?" Now, that's out of the mouth of babes, you know? I mean, why? How in the world do we live in a world where the most powerful man in the world thinks it's okay to raise money for that practice? We need to pray for President Obama and for our other leaders who agree with the same practice. We live in a world where all that stuff is fine. We live in a world where we're finite and confused. We don't know what we ought to do. We don't know how much money to save. We don't know what medical treatment to engage in. I mentioned to you about my brother yesterday. They don't know what in the world's wrong with him or how to fix it. Got the best doctors in the whole world looking at his brain. They don't know what to do. What are you going to do? You can't be upset about that. They're doing the best they can. We're just finite, frail, limited people. So there's all these things we go on. That's just a partial list. We could talk about 10 or 12 realities that just press in on us, and nobody did anything to anybody. We just live in this cosmos where sin reigns and death reigns and pain reigns. And so we're going to need to counsel people who need help with that. We're going to counsel people who their parents died and they're sad. Their kid died and they're sad. Where they're being tormented by the devil. Where a supermarket of sexual assaults tempts them away from marital fidelity. We're going to need to do counseling for those people. And what is the biblical counseling solution when you didn't do anything and nobody did anything to you? You're just experiencing pain. What is the Christian solution to that? You know, the Christian solution is trust God. You have to trust God. It's at this point where I really, if I had to do secular counseling, I would despair tonight. I wouldn't know what to say. I mean, we're in a car, it's headed off a cliff, and you can't do anything about it. You are going to die. I am going to die. And there's nothing you can do. What do you say? What do you say? I don't know what you say if you're not a Christian. But if you're a Christian, what you can say is there is a God whose name is Jesus Christ, and he has conquered sin and death and hell and the devil for you. And because he beat death, in him you can beat death. Because he has conquered the devil and has conquered all pain, he knows how to comfort you in the midst of yours. And so, I don't know how you offer counseling help if you don't know who Jesus of Nazareth is. If you don't know a God who's able to bring comfort. And what I want to do is I want in our remaining time to look at Psalm 23. And I mean for this to be an examination of a passage that you're familiar with. Psalm 23 is a really famous passage of the Bible and perhaps the most famous psalm in the Psalter. And I mean to give you here a passage that you can actually use in your life as you're perhaps struggling with sorrow over real pain that you're experiencing. I want to give you this passage as a passage that you could use as you do ministry with others who are experiencing pain. And I want to observe a few realities about this passage with you. First is that we're in pain and we need comfort, and that's what we've been talking about. We've been speaking for a few minutes about all of the different ways that we experience pain and we need comfort. And as we read Psalm 23, I want to talk about how it is the Lord who brings comfort. So look at Psalm 23. I don't have my real actual Bible with me. This is a stand-in. I brought it because it's smaller than my real actual Bible. And so I keep losing my place and stuff isn't on the page where it should be. So sorry if this has been a little awkward at times. I'll try to get through Psalm 23 here. Here's what Psalm 23 says, a passage that is familiar to you. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is a passage about how the Lord brings comfort. And he brings comfort that is available in no other place. Where else are you going to go for comfort? Where else are you going to go for solace and relief in a world that's closing in on you and headed towards destruction? You need something big. You need a person who exists outside of that world and who controls your destiny beyond that world. Psalm 23 gives us a couple of realities about how the Lord brings comfort in the midst of such pain, and so how we can trust him. So here's a couple of ways in Psalm 23 about how the Lord brings comfort. First, God is actively involved in caring for his people. That's the first thing we see in Psalm 23 about how the Lord brings comfort. The Lord is actively involved in caring for his people. This is based on a fact and on a promise. Here's the fact. Verse 23, or Psalm 23, verse 1. The fact. The Lord is my shepherd. That's the fact. And the promise is also verse 1, I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd, fact, so promise, I shall not want. I will be okay. The devil's coming in, Death and dying are closing in. The world is opposed to me. I'm finite and confused, but the Lord's my shepherd. I shall not want. Imagine, what a shocking statement. In the world I've just described, David is able to say, I shall not want. In that world of pain. And the reason he shall not want is because the Lord is his shepherd. And so how does the Lord shepherd his people and protect us from want? Well, I think there's four ways that we see this in Psalm 23. First, he gives his people rest. He gives his people rest. He makes them lie down in green pastures. That's a fascinating phrase. You wouldn't think that you would need to be made to lay down in green pastures, but that's what the Lord does. There's green pastures there, and he makes us lie down in them. He leads us beside still waters. He restores our soul. God made slow days with cool grass and still waters so we would have a category for the rest that we need in him. All of those realities point us to the Lord and our need to take comfort and rest in him. That's the first thing God does to shepherd us, to protect us from want. Here's the second thing. He makes us holy. He makes us holy. In verse 3, he restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. One of the things, this goes back to the first category, but one of the things that causes so much pain in our life is our own sin. Our sin is chiefly responsible for a tremendous amount of the pain that we experience. How are we going to get out of that? How are we going to get out of the cycle of our sin that devolves into more and more pain? We need a shepherd who protects us from want by making us righteous. This is the gospel right here in Psalm 23. You need a God who makes you righteous, who's able to do what you can't do and be righteous on your behalf and give you his power so that you can obey his very own commands. You're protected from want, from the want of righteousness by a God who makes you righteous himself. God shepherds his people and protects them from want by giving us rest, by making us holy. Three, he shepherds us and protects us from want by being with us. By being with us. We, if we would choose it, deal with pain by making the pain go away, don't we? Isn't that our favorite way to deal with pain? Make it go away. Devil's on our tail, make the devil go away. World's out to get us, make the world go away. Sinful people victimize us, make that go away. Our favorite way to deal with pain is to make it go away. That is not the way the Lord most typically deals with pain in this life. The Lord does not deal with pain in this life usually by making it go away. The Lord deals with pain usually in this life by promising us that in the pain, he's with us. He'll be with you. He will stand guard over you and protect you in the midst of the pain so that, in verse 4, in the shadow of death, he's there. So that in verse 6, every day of your life, he's there. Look at verse 6. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. That's talking about God. In Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. He makes me lie down. He leads me beside still waters. He leads me in paths of righteousness. Even though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for you are with me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. Every single verse talks about God, 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 God. We're not supposed to get to verse 6 and think that there is some kind of goodness and mercy outside of God that follows us all the day in his life. David is talking about God in fresh ways. He's saying that God is the personification of goodness and mercy, which will follow you all the days of your life. All the days of pain in this life, God will be with you, and then in eternity, God will be with you too. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We want a world with no pain. What God gives us is a world with pain where we have to trust him, where we need his comfort. Why is that? This is a very important question. Why do that? Why not just make the pain go away? Is God some sort of cruel jerk? Well, no. But in a world, in the world in which we live, it's nearly impossible to separate the gift from the giver. All of us have so many blessings. I mean, all you have to do is look out the door. I mean, I'm feeling the Hawaiian breeze blow through here. If I were standing in Kentucky at this point, the breeze would be about 70 degrees cooler than that is. It's miserable. It was 1 degree when we left Louisville, all right? So all you have to do is look out the window to see blessings. Most of you had breakfast this morning. Most of you are going to have lunch today. All of you have clothes on your back. Thank the Lord for that, right? We are surrounded with blessings. Every place we turn, even the poorest among us is, relatively speaking, overwhelmed with blessing. How do you know that you actually love God and not just God's good gifts? How do you know? How do you really know for sure? Here's how you know. You know when God takes the blessings away. And if God takes the blessings away and you still love God, then you're a Christian. And if God takes the blessings away and you say, curse God and die, then you're not a Christian. This is why the Apostle Peter in his epistle will say that our faith needs to be refined by fire to result in praise and honor at the last day. The most important thing we can figure out in this life is, do we love God or do we love what God gives? And if we only love what God gives, we are idolaters and we will go to hell. But if pain leads us to the shepherd of our souls and we find comfort in him, then we'll have everlasting joy. And so the thing that causes us the most angst in this life is the thing that God is using to lead us to be with him for world without end. Amen. God doesn't give us a world with no pain. He gives us a world with pain where we can find comfort from him. And then a fourth way that God brings comfort is by showering us with blessings. Verse 5, we get vindication when we're wronged. He gives honor and comfort. He gives abundant physical provision. How do you know that God does that for you? How do you know that God is your shepherd? Well, Jesus in Matthew 27, verses 45 to 46, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? People get tied up with the question, but you know what? On the cross, Jesus really was forsaken. He was forsaken. And he was forsaken so that the promise in Hebrews 13, I will never leave you or forsake you, could be yours. There is no comfort in Psalm 23 if Jesus Christ has not been forsaken on your behalf. But Jesus has been forsaken on our behalf. And so we can know the comfort of a shepherd who will never leave us regardless of the pain. And so the biblical counseling solution to people who are suffering from sin in a sinful world is something that nobody but those who know Jesus has to offer. And it's trust the Lord. Trust in him to comfort you when the chips are down. Trust him to comfort you and shepherd you and watch over you when it feels like there's no hope anywhere else. Trust the Lord. He's your shepherd. You shall not want.